of his, but a song we'll sing. Fears that we will die. You can make the mountains ring, or make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing, and you may not know why. Come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together. Try to love one another right now. Some may come and some may go, he will surely pay. When the one that left us here returns for us at last, we are but a moment's sunlight fading in the grass. Come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together, try to love one another. Come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together, try to love one another right now.
Welcome and thanks for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and the Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and if you're just joining us, we're listening to Chris Hedges talk about his book, The Empire of Illusion, in the style of an Old Testament prophet. Chris Hedges decries the coming capitalist totalitarianism and urges activists to promote democratic socialism. Journalist Chris Hedges discusses the dramatic rise of a post-literate society that craves fantasy, ecstasy, and illusion. And now here is Chris Hedges.
The continued release of large quantities of methane, some scientists have warned, could actually asphyxiate the human species. But even in the face of this crisis, the oil and gas industry, along with the coal industry, have blunted and comes before the urgent task to save the ecosystem on which human life depends. Our working class, which has desperately borrowed money to stay afloat as real wages have dropped, now face years, maybe decades, of stagnant or declining incomes without access to new credit. The national treasury is being drained on behalf of speculative commercial interests. The government, the only institution citizens have that is big enough and powerful enough to protect its rights, is becoming weaker, more anemic, and increasingly unable to help the mass of Americans who are embarking on a period of profound deprivation. We have been borrowing at the rate of more than $2 billion a day over the last 10 years. And at some point, it has to end. The moment China, the oil-rich states, and other international investors stop buying treasury bonds and walk away from the dollar, which now appears to be underway, we will have no choice but to allow the Federal Reserve to buy treasury bonds, in essence printing money. And at that point, our currency will become junk. Inflation will rocket upward, and we will become Weimar Germany. A furious and sustained backlash by a betrayed and angry populace, one unprepared emotionally, intellectually, and psychologically for collapse, will sweep aside the Democrats and most of the Republicans. It was the economic collapse in Yugoslavia that gave us Slobodan Milosevic. It was the Weimar Republic that vomited up Adolf Hitler. And it was the breakdown in Tsarist Russia that opened the door for Lenin and the Bolsheviks. A cobble of proto-fascist misfits, from Christian demagogues to loudmouth talk show hosts, who we naively dismiss as buffoons, will find a following with promises of revenge and moral renewal. There are powerful corporate entities, fearful of losing their influence and wealth, arrayed against us. These anti-democratic forces, which will make an alliance with the radical Christian right and other extremists, will use fear, chaos, the hatred for the ruling elites, and the specter of left-wing dissent and terrorism to impose draconian controls to extinguish our democracy. And while they do it, they will be waving the American flag, chanting patriotic slogans, promising law and order, and clutching the Christian cross. Totalitarianism, George Orwell pointed out, is not so much an age of faith, but an age of schizophrenia. A society becomes totalitarian when its structure becomes flagrantly artificial, Orwell warned. That is, when its ruling class has lost its function, but succeeds in clinging to power by force or fraud. And force is soon all our elites will have left. And yet, mass culture assures us, even in the midst of catastrophe, that if we close our eyes, if we visualize what we want, if we have faith in ourselves, if we tell God that we believe in miracles, if we tap into our inner strength, if we grasp that we are truly exceptional, if we focus on happiness, our lives will be harmonious and complete. This cultural retreat into illusion, whether peddled by positive psychologists, Hollywood, or Christian preachers, is a form of magical thinking. It turns worthless mortgages and debt into wealth. It turns the destruction of our manufacturing base into an opportunity for growth. It turns alienation and anxiety into a cheerful conformity. It turns a nation that wages illegal wars and administers offshore penal colonies where it openly practices torture into the greatest democracy on earth. It is time to fight back against corporate culture in small and large ways. Coalitions of environmental, anti-nuclear, anti-capitalist, sustainable agriculture, and anti-globalization forces have coalesced in Europe to form and support socialist parties. This has yet to happen in the United States. The left never rallied in significant numbers behind Cynthia McKinney or Ralph Nader, and this was our mistake. In picking the lesser of two evils, it threw its lot in with a Democratic Party that again has proven that it backs our imperial wars, empowers the national security state, does the bidding of corporations, and ignores the needs of citizens. If Obama does not end the flagrant theft of taxpayer dollars by corporations, and the disgraceful abandonment of our working class, especially as foreclosures and unemployment mount. Many in the country will turn in desperation to the far right, embodied by groups such as Christian radicals. The failure by progressives to offer a democratic socialist alternative, the only alternative remaining that can save our open society, to openly make war on corporate power, to continue to back the Democratic Party, will mean there will be, in the eyes of many embittered and struggling working and middle-class Americans, no alternative but a perverted Christian fascism. I spent 2 years traveling the country to write a book on the Christian right called American Fascists, the Christian Right, and the War on America. I visited former manufacturing towns where, for many, the end of the world is no longer an abstraction. They have lost hope. Fear and instability has plunged the working class into profound personal and economic despair, and not surprisingly, into the arms of demagogues and charlatans of the radical Christian right, who offer a belief in magic, miracles, and the fiction of a utopian Christian nation. And unless we rapidly re-enfranchise these dispossessed workers back into the economy, unless we give them hope, our democracy is doomed. Democracies, as writers as ancient as Plutarch and Thucydides understood, cannot be sustained in oligarchic states. We forgot that social reform never comes from accommodating the power structure, but from frightening it. The Liberty Party, which fought slavery, the suffragists who battled for women's rights, the labor movement and the civil rights movement knew that the question was not, how do we get good people to rule? Most of those attracted to power are at best mediocrities and often venal. But how do we limit the damage the powerful do to us? These mass movements were the real engines for social reform, the correctives to our democracy, and the true protectors of the rights of citizens. We must begin to opt out of the mainstream. We must rebuild socialism as a viable political force. We must no longer be content with the crumbs tossed to us in the vain hope that we can influence the power elite from the inside. We must become as militant as those who are seeking our enslavement. If we remain passive, we will soon be engulfed by a ruthless totalitarian capitalism. If we remain passive, as we undergo the largest transference of wealth upwards in American history, we will become serfs. If we fight back, we have a chance. The saturation coverage of Jackson's death was one of many examples of our collective flight into illusion. It deflected the moral questions arising from mounting social injustice, growing inequalities, failing imperial wars, economic collapse, and political corruption. As we sink into an economic and political morass, as we barrel towards a crisis that will create more misery than the Great Depression, we remain controlled, manipulated, and distracted by the celluloid shadows on the wall of Plato's cave. The fantasy of celebrity culture is not designed simply to entertain. It is designed to drain us emotionally, confuse us about our identity, blame ourselves for our predicament, condition us to chase illusions of impossible fame and happiness, and keep us from fighting back. And in the end, that is all the Jackson coverage was really about. Another tawdry and tasteless spectacle to divert a dying culture from the baying wolf at the gate. Thank you.
70 years ago, at about the same time as that quotation you gave us from Roosevelt, warning us about corporate culture and non-regulation, Sinclair Lewis, the novelist, wrote a relatively unknown piece called It Can't Happen Here.
Yep.
I see you nodding already, but it can. My question, actually, based in part upon that work of fiction, is this evening we are privileged to hear not only an indictment, but a small message of hope to inform our, say, collective understanding. But given the corporate culture and given particularly the pop media, how does one get past that, if at all? That is to say, the most popular television shows on cable this week, at least on Monday's Times, were World Wrestling followed by SpongeBob SquarePants. And, of course, there's always sports. What are the options within the media per se, not all of us read Truth Dig, to get past that continuing illusion that all is right with the world and that it can't happen here?
Well, you know, I opened the book with professional wrestling and found it a fascinating lens to describe the narratives that make sense within popular culture. My grandfather used to watch wrestling religiously once a week when the narratives within professional wrestling were built around racism, xenophobia. They were always battling somebody named the Russian Bear or the Iron Sheik, or the person you know, who embodied American values always was sort of blonde and blue-eyed, and that narrative's gone now. It's all about personal disintegration, infidelities, sibling rivalries, physical abuse. There is no good or evil, no delineation between good or evil. Everybody cheats as soon as the referee turns their back. And I attended one of these professional wrestling bouts in Madison Square Garden. It was completely sold out, mostly working class, mostly white. And some of these guys are huge. I mean, upwards of 500 pounds. I mean, they're just massive. And they played out the fantasies of revenge that in real life these people don't have. But the narratives were stunning, stunningly reflective of what's happening in the country at large. There was a whole narrative going that night around a wrestler. His name is Shawn Michaels. His wrestling name is the Heartbreak Kid, who had been wiped out, lost his 401k, thrown, foreclosed from his house, and was now within the grip of an evil capitalist named JB. Are you wrestling fans? Oh. And there's another long rivalry between a guy who supposedly was a prison guard in Georgia and a former prisoner who he abused physically within prison, who enters the ring in an orange jumpsuit and has post-traumatic stress disorder. But suddenly you begin to see within these narratives that personal disintegration that is ripped apart whole communities. You rip apart communities physically. And if you've been in Youngstown or, you know, innumerable, I've just spent over a week in Camden, New Jersey for Harper's Magazine, because per capita is the poorest city in America. And when you just destroy the physical possibility of community, then you destroy the emotional possibility of community and family. And it's not coming back. How do we... you have to build walls. Popular culture is so intrusive that you have to physically try and wall it out. I learned this in Yugoslavia, where the first thing... And you know, the war in Yugoslavia was not caused by ancient ethnic hatreds. It was caused by the economic collapse of Yugoslavia. 25,000% inflation. Again, you know, money in paper bags. And the first thing the nationalist parties did, whether it was Franjo Tuđman, was take over the airwaves. And they bombarded you like Fox News, day in and day out, so that you would even question Yugoslavs who had great disquiet over what was happening within their own country. And yet they spoke in the perverted cliches and jargon by which they were handed. It's even if you don't agree with the war on terror, as soon as you use the phrase the war on terror, you're limited in terms of your possibilities of self-expression, of creating another narrative. And I mean, that's why I don't own a television. And I work as hard as I can to distance myself from the cant of popular culture so that I can speak in my own language, not the one they give me. And that requires reading. I mean, what is most frightening about American society is that we are shifting from a print-based culture to an image-based culture. And we are confusing how we are made to feel with knowledge, confusing propaganda with ideology. And totalitarian societies are image-based societies, built around image and spectacle. So I think consciously shutting out the poison is a really important first step.
This is not intended at all as a hostile question, because I'm in great sympathy.
I've had many, so that's okay.
No, it's really not. I mean, I know you're not afraid of it, but I just want to make that clear from my own point of view. Because I'm really in great sympathy with your argument, not just this argument, but arguments you've made in your other books as well. But my question is just, what evidence or arguments can you give us to convince us that your prescription for some kind of escape from this horrible scenario for the future is less utopian than the right-wing scenarios, which are based on emotion and hope and fears? I'm just, you know...
Well, because utopianism is a non-reality-based belief system. That's how we got into Iraq. Having spent 7 years in the Middle East, being an Arabic speaker, many, many months of my life in Iraq, the idea that we would occupy Iraq and be greeted as liberators, that democracy would be implanted in Baghdad and emanate outwards across the Middle East, that the oil revenues would pay for all the reconstruction, was utopian. I use the word utopian the way Thomas More coined it in 1516, which means no place. It doesn't exist. You probably never thought of Dick Cheney as a utopian, but he is. And the culture of illusion, the empire of illusion, is failing to recognize the inevitable economic decline. It's not just that we can't pay for the lifestyles that we are maintaining internally. We can't pay for empire. I think by 2010, the federal government will have to pay $92 billion a week to service the debt. We're finished. And if you look in the twilight period of any empire, Roman, read Cicero. Austro-Hungarian, read Joseph Roth. The Ottoman Empire, people fall, or even the Egyptian Empire, for some reason, people fall into this collective state of self-delusion where they are utterly unable to see the walls literally collapsing around them and believe in these fantasies of a glorious tomorrow. I mean, the pyramids were built to immortalize for eternity the pharaohs at the very moment that the Egyptian empire disintegrated. I mean, it's a kind of metaphor. It's why the New York Times goes out and buys a $600 million office building at the moment it dies. It's a kind of psychological thing. Things are so grim that there becomes a retreat into illusion. And what is illusion? It's really a state of eternal childishness. It's a kind of infantilizing of a society. But the danger is that as that the gap or the chasm opens up between the illusion and reality, eventually, it becomes impossible when you're being foreclosed from your home, when your unemployment insurance runs out, when you are bankrupt because of medical bills. It becomes impossible to ignore the reality. But if you're not prepared for it, then you react as children, which is to look for a savior, a demagogue, to save you from these inexplicable forces that have not been prepared for intellectually, emotionally, or psychologically to confront. And that's the danger. Hope, you know, I covered wars for 20 years. We didn't use the word pessimist or optimist. We took very sober readings of which weapon systems were at the end of that road and what the capacity were of those weapon systems to do us harm. And people, and I knew them, war correspondents that had, you know, fantasies about immortality usually didn't live very long.
Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are
are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
You can hear great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Fill my heart with song. Let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, in other words, I love.
And now for something completely different.
You